discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. This is going to be a hard show to listen to, I think, because we're talking about a subject that is very traumatic in the social fiber of our country. So many of us don't want to know actually what happens in an abortion. But it's one of those topics that we have to be educated on, know what happens, so that we can begin to understand it, come to grips with it, and to deal with it in its proper form. Abortion is the surgical or a chemical termination of a pregnancy. But it's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Well, it is. And in terms like termination of pregnancy, products of conception, those sorts of terms have been used since the beginning of the abortion debate. And they are a sort of a camouflage way of talking about it again, trying to steer away from the reality of what abortion really is. And ultimately, abortion is the killing of an unborn human life, at least one and maybe more. And there's multiple different ways in which this can be accomplished. You know, it's always intrigued me that you look at national television, for example, different network programs and news programs and things that are out there. And, you know, if there's a Holocaust someplace, you know, the war in Iraq's a good example of how they show you pictures of people dying in the streets. Mm-hmm. Or if they've got some deadly something or other going on, they'll take pictures of it and show it to everybody. They may give them a little warning ahead of time, but they don't have any hesitation to show them what this is all about. But isn't it curious that since 1973, and even before 1973, when the abortion decision was handed down by the Supreme Court, even before that time, up until the present time, where have we ever seen an abortion on television? Where have we ever seen the limbs and the ankles and the toes and the different parts of the fetus laid out in identifiable parts? These aren't things that you can not identify. Where are they? What's happened? Why? What's it about this issue that you're trying to cover up? It's a cover-up. It's clear. They absolutely do not want to show that. Now, why don't they want to show that? Well, it's very clear. They don't want people to really know what this is because there might be an uproar. My goodness, what would happen if the absolute cornerstone of contemporary social liberalism is pulled out from underneath them? I mean, their whole move towards contraception and towards the artificial reproductive technologies and towards cloning and towards embryonic stem cell research and towards embryo experimentation of one type or another. And you go on and on, all the things that we hear about those things in the news, of course, but you never hear what this is really about. They don't show you pictures. There's a conspiracy of silence. And so as Americans, as citizens, we have a responsibility to find out what this is. And not close your own ears or your own eyes to it, because every day 4,000 or 5,000 of these unborn babies are killed in the United States. And over the last 30-some years, I guess 1973 until now, 34 years, is that? Mm-hmm. Or is it four? I don't even know. But it's
too
in the
many.
40 to 50 million have been destroyed and killed. Now, how many babies that might have found the cure to AIDS? How many babies might have found a cure to social injustice of one sort or another? How many babies out there might have found creative ways to solve peacefully international conflict? You just keep going on and on and on of what we've lost in terms of our culture and our society. No, we'll never know, of course, but you think about that, and it's pretty dramatic about how that affects you.
abortion has been with us longer than the 1960s. It's actually been a part of human history for thousands of years. So you go back to ancient Rome, where abortions occurred quite frequently. You look back on those times and you would say, this is barbaric, how they perform those abortions. Mm-hmm. But with even the techniques that are used today, because we do not talk about that, we don't slap that label on the procedure. But once you know how it occurs and what happens, I don't know another term that could better suit it than barbaric.
Well, yeah, it is totally barbaric. The procedures that are used are things like a DNC and a suction curettage. They're two separate procedures, but very similar. And these are the methodologies used in the first trimester of pregnancy. And the cervix is dilated, and then instruments are placed inside the uterus, and the baby is scraped out and, in the process, cut up and dismembered. And that's why you really couldn't even see a complete baby put together after one of those abortions, because they're just dismembered, just completely dismembered. And in every other area of our human existence, we would call it utter violence, horrible, horrible, catastrophic even set of events when an abortion is being performed. And yet in our culture, we've smoothed it all over, and we make it all like this is okay, and people want it, and it's a part of women being liberated, and it goes on and on and on. And nothing could be further from the truth.
The woman really is not in quite literally a position to even see what's happening to her body or to the baby that she's carrying, because of how that, especially in the first trimester, it's not unlike the feeling you would have maybe during a pap test. Am I correct?
Yeah, to a certain extent. But you're right. They don't show them what they've taken out of their uterus. Mm-hmm. And again, why not? Why don't they show them? Well, it's a simple answer, really, because you don't want them to see what you've taken out of their uterus, and what horror that would be to that young woman, usually a young woman, to know the reality. They purposely, I mean, these abortion operations have purposely fought against informed consent laws, where they can actually show pictures of the baby or at that stage of development, or even the after effect of an abortion. They fought against those kinds of laws because they don't want them to be informed. They don't want them to know what they're doing and what's happening. And then they say, well, it's going to be too disturbing to them. They're going to have an emotional reaction of some sort. But I remember a long time ago when I got involved in all of this and got involved in some debates, and people would say, well, you're just emotional, or the whole argument against abortion is emotional. That's a way for people of speaking where they can sort of pull the rug out from under you. Mm-hmm. But it occurred to me that it was emotional, but then why? I'd always ask myself, why was it emotional? And it could be that our emotions are trying to tell us something in all of this. And mm-hmm. it's not that, I don't think we have to be afraid of the fact that it's emotional to talk about this. But we have to realize that those emotions, some of those emotions actually are valid, and they're good emotions. They're supposed to be there, and they're telling us something about what we've just done or what has just happened. So, you know, the emotion of the whole thing is something we've got to face too.
There's nothing wrong with that. I agree with you 100%, because imagine what you would think of someone who did not see the pictures at Auschwitz or Birkenbelsen or those different places that a Holocaust has occurred, and not feel an emotion, to not see the effects of the people at Nagasaki and Hiroshima after a dropping of a bomb and not having a response to that.
Yeah.
I mean, we cry when something happens to animals in movies.
Right.
I mean, for us not to have an emotion about something that is so intrinsically human, what would that say about the type of humans we're growing into?
Well, we would have become very cold and calculated and distant and robotic-like. Of course, we're really not that way at all. That's not who we are as human beings. And it's a hard issue to talk about, like you said earlier, because the more you describe it, the more you talk about it to people, the more sometimes it seems like it's almost fruitless, because they just don't seem to want to always listen to it or hear what you have to say about it. So we need to keep spreading the message and keep talking about it, though, because somewhere along the line it'll take hold. We have to get it out of all the political mess that it's in, and get it to a point where people really understand the issues, and we have to educate better. And I mean, it just goes on and on, the responsibilities we have on this issue.
One of the great tools that is out there now to help us understand is the ultrasound machine. Being able to see so many of the pregnancy crisis centers that are located next to abortion clinics now, they can get that young girl just to come over and take a look at the ultrasound of her baby. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, the stories that I've heard, the transformations that can occur in that woman's heart.
We made our first movie on ultrasound images in 1981. And at that time, I made the comment as I was narrating this film that ultrasound was in its early stages of development and that it's only going to get better. And sure enough, it did and has. And now we have 3D ultrasound and 4D ultrasound at the Pope Paul VI Institute, and you can get third-dimensional pictures of a baby in the uterus. It looks like you've taken an instamatic camera and taken a picture of them. And, you know, there's no question what's there and what's happening. So ultrasound is making a big impact, actually, and will continue to do so. In fact, there's been a little bit of a decline in the number of abortions just in the last 5 years, and it may be in part due to that, I think.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment. A teaching of St. Paul from his second letter to the Corinthians. We are not discouraged. Rather, although our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to what is seen, but to what is unseen. For what is seen is transitory, but what is unseen is eternal. A prayer to St. Gerard Majella for the respect of life. St. Gerard Majella, women the world over have adopted you as their patron in the joys and fears of childbearing. Today, we invoke your intercession for the unborn children in our world. Pray that all people will look upon human life as a gift from God, not as an unwanted burden to be destroyed. Assist the efforts of those enlisted in the crusade of promoting the dignity and value of all human life, particularly the unborn. This we ask through Christ our Lord. Amen. We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. A remarkable picture was presented in news across the world of a young child who was just going home from the hospital at 4 pounds. The remarkable part of that story is that this baby was born at 21 weeks. 21 weeks is in the second trimester, am I mistaken?
Yeah, it's in the middle of the second trimester.
And at that time, many abortions occur today in that second trimester.
Yeah. There's even more incredible, an article in today's newspaper yesterday of a baby that weighed 10 ounces, I think, and was 9.5 inches long when it was born. I didn't get the gestational age at the time, but 10 ounces. And that baby's going home from the hospital now.
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing to think that there are forces out there that are fighting and struggling to keep that child alive, and yet there are forces that are maybe even a little bigger now that are fighting to take the life from human beings that are that same size.
Well, it's part of our schizophrenia in the medical profession and in the healthcare professions, where you can deliver a baby in one room and do an abortion in the next room. And I remember a priest that I met, an Episcopal priest, many years ago, Father Charles Carroll, who was an observer at the Nuremberg war crime trials. And in one of his talks, he said, "One of the things that I have been plagued with my whole adult life was how could a young German soldier get up in the morning, say table grace, eat breakfast, and go off and kill how many Jews that he would do then that day and then come back home. How could they do that? What a schizophrenia that is." Well, we're living that again today in today's world, throughout the Western world. It's probably a product of our very corrupt morals that we've fallen into. And so we've got, you know, the schizophrenia that exists where, you know, you got the neonatal nursery that you're talking about where you've got a young baby and you're fighting for that baby's existence. And then maybe in another room in the same hospital, they're aborting that same baby or another baby just like it. It doesn't make any sense. It's all convenience. It's all, you know, what makes you feel good, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know how someone could feel good about a dilatation and extraction. It's a bloody, nasty procedure. Could you help us understand exactly for those who just don't know?
Yeah, the dilatation and extraction procedure is one that's done at about the 12th to the 16th week of pregnancy. Most abortions are done in the first trimester, which is up to the 12th week. And then between the 12th and the 16th, the baby's grown large enough so that you can't just go in and scrape it out. So they dilate the cervix still. They take the same approach, but they take instruments to go in and they purposely morselate or cut up the baby in parts to remove it in parts because there'd be no other way. Everything's too large to pass through the cervical canal at that point. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a horrible procedure. It is a bloody procedure, like you said, and a lot of times there's quite an excessive blood loss associated with it, but it's a horrible procedure, just horrible.
And the mother is asleep? Do they
usually? Well, she may be, but there's local anesthesia that can be used for it, regional anesthetic blocks that can be used for it, so it's not universally that she's asleep.
Maybe a spinal?
Yeah, it could be a spinal. I mean, there's different, I'm not actually around them when they're being done, so thank God.
Yeah. But that's another one of those cases that because of the position of the mother on her back, she may not see exactly what's occurring in her body and to her child.
Well, yeah, you're right, and they don't really know. And
because of the drapes and everything else.
In this era of informed consent again.
Exactly.
This is an era where this is an angle where they don't want to be informed.
Yeah, if you were having surgery on your body and you're going to have something removed or you're going to have your knee fixed or you're going to have a bone, you know, you would be told in detail by the surgeon what exactly is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
But they don't do that to the mothers in this case.
No, it's like, and they constantly get away with it.
Talk to us of the multi-fetal reduction.
Well, you know, when the abortion debate started a number of years ago, going into the late 60s, early 70s, leading up to the Roe v. Wade decision, it was based on if the woman had been raped or product of incest or maybe the baby was deformed or just an unwanted pregnancy. Now, all of a sudden, it's moved into for women who desperately want a pregnancy. So these are women with infertility, and they go to the fertility doctors who do different different procedures on them that end up with multiple embryos and multiple babies in utero. So if there's a 4, 5, or 6 babies in there, I mean, all the doctors know that that's going to make it especially high-risk pregnancy, not only for the mother, but the babies, because they'll be born prematurely. So they say, well, you've got to abort some of these babies. So they do what's called multi-fetal reduction. Now, isn't that a euphemistic phrase? If you can ever think of one, where they isolate the baby, they inject the heart with potassium chloride, which is a poison to the heart. It stops the beating heart right in front of them because it's all done under ultrasound. This is ultrasound used for all the bad purposes. Mm-hmm. And so they kill 2 or 3 of the babies so they can have 1 or 2 or whatever and lower the prematurity rate and lower the complication rate for the mother and so forth. In some cities, in some clinics, they ask the parents to specifically sign permission that if they have a multiple pregnancy that they will agree to multi-fetal reduction.
Oh, my goodness.
In other cases, so in other words, it becomes a component of the whole care plan.
Part of the deal.
Part of the deal that if you're going to go through this way of achieving life, you also have to accept the destruction of life as a part of it. Well, I mean, it's part of the schizophrenia that we're dealing with. And so you end up with a sort of a new form of abortion. And these are women who desperately want to be pregnant. This isn't an unwanted pregnancy. This isn't rape. This isn't incest. This isn't a baby born with or conceived with a defect of some sort. These are absolutely 100% wanted pregnancies. And now you're putting this woman and her husband through this process of having to kill some of their own children in order to have that 1 or 2 babies that they want. it's a horrible set of circumstances that we're subjecting these people to.
And I don't want to sound crass. It's just heartbreaking. This is not the ultrasound video you're going to take home to show everyone.
No. No. This is not. I would venture to say they don't give out those ultrasounds.
No. I wonder if they even see the screen.
Well, they probably don't, actually. You're quite right about that. Those screens you can turn away from the patients, and that's probably what happens.
Oh, it's so sad. And another procedure, the amniofusion, that it's horrific. Help me. That's when they place saline in the uterus. Saline is a salt solution.
Right.
On tender, tender new skin, it burns.
It's a 20% salt solution, so it's like brine.
Ugh.
And they put a needle into the fluid around the baby. They withdraw a certain amount of fluid, and they replace that with 20% salt solution, which is brine, basically a pickling solution. And then the woman, incidentally, she goes through labor. Oh, did we tell you through labor? So she goes through labor for the next 10 or 15 hours and finally delivers a dead baby. In one of our books, I've written two books on the abortion issue, and one of the books we have a graph, which was published, I think, before Roe v. Wade, actually, in which this doctor, this is horrible, but this doctor published the moment they gave him the saline, and this is in 15 different pregnancies, and they monitored the heart rate of the babies every 15 minutes until they went to zero. And that's supposed to be science. And
the suffering the child must go through at that point. Imagine the worst of sunburns or the worst of burns mm-hmm. on your body, on a hand or a finger or somewhere. But imagine that throughout your whole body, in your eyes, everywhere.
Well, these babies undergo convulsions and everything. I mean, it's a horrible death. I mean, it's a really horrible death. And, there's always been this argument of whether babies at this stage of the pregnancy actually feel pain or not. But there's been very good studies to show that absolutely 100% they feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken little needles to stroke the palm of their hand, and they feel that they close their hand. If you poke certain parts of their body, they react to it. There's no question that they feel pain. It's been shown, and in terms of their, the development of their nervous system, those sensory components are there at a fairly early stage of pregnancy, and so it's certainly true that they do feel pain. And again, it's an incredibly large insensitivity that we have to this whole thing. We've drawn a curtain of iron in front of us that we can't see through, but it's on purpose that we've drawn it, because we don't want to see through it, and we don't want anybody else to see through it. And it becomes this deception again, and this fraud that we've perpetrated upon the public.
It is what it is. I mean, in the first trimester, we've talked of just the scraping out of the woman's uterus with a mechanism that it's spoon-like, but with claws, and scraping out the inside of the uterus. Not only does it damage the child, but what you're doing to the inside of the muscles of your uterus in that clawing.
Yeah.
Also using suction to suction out. Again, the same, similar type of damage.
Yeah, the suction is attached to a vacuum cleaner-like mechanism, and the baby, when it's done at that point, is pretty fragile yet. So mm-hmm. it just sucks and gets dismembered all the way through the cords that go into the jars where it collects the material.
And then in the second trimester, these horrific mutilations and destruction of the body of the child within the womb of the mother.
Right.
I mean, that is horrific.
The partial birth abortion you're talking about?
Well, I was just going to get to the third trimester, because not only have we had all these horrific things happen in the second trimester, but by the time you get to the third trimester, then we're at partial birth abortion.
Yeah. These babies are delivered in the breech presentation, so their feet and buttocks comes first, but the head is too large. It won't come through the cervix. So they put scissors through the back of the baby's skull. They open it up multiple times so that they homogenize the brain tissue.
Pith.
And then they take a suction and they go into the brain cavity, the skeleton cavity, suck it all out so it collapses. Then they could deliver the baby.
Oh.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's something that should really be mentioned here, as you just mentioned, the third trimester. The abortion policy in the United States is, I think, the most extreme policy of any country in the world. We don't get that message from very many people. but it's worse than China. It's worse than Russia at the height of its communist regime or some of the Eastern Bloc countries. You can have an abortion in the United States at any stage of pregnancy. Does it make any difference what stage? You could be an hour from delivering your own baby at full term and still have an abortion if, in fact, some doctor said that you were mentally compromised or some other thing that they could make up along the way. So it's a horrible situation that we've gotten ourselves into. And there's something about it all that's very disturbing, and I think it's had an enormous impact on our politics in this country. Ultimately, when you see the division between sort of political philosophies, at the core of one of those philosophies is abortion and the protection of abortion at all costs. And you see this in some of the debates that occur, political debates. No matter what, they're going to protect abortion to their utmost. It's kind of odd in a way that they would put so much into protecting abortion. Mm-hmm. But it does tell you something about the framework of their own value system, who these people are as people, and how cold and distant and insensitive they really are. And, you know, we as Americans, we've got to become a lot more astute to this.
It's amazing to me that there are women today that are struggling through a pregnancy, trying so hard to keep their baby within the womb to be able to bring it to term in a healthy pregnancy. And there are obstetricians that are helping them to do that. But on the same token, a baby in the same term in another woman's womb is completely vulnerable and could be born at a live, healthy birth, but is destroyed in such a barbaric, cruel way.
Yeah, it's horrible. It really is horrible.
There are alternatives, many alternatives. And one of the alternatives that shines like a beacon is the Pope Paul VI Institute, located in Omaha, Nebraska, but also there for everyone in the United States and throughout the world. Do not forsake hope, and there is healing, and there are alternatives. And we thank you for helping us, enlightening us, and giving us the truth, Dr. Hilgers.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.